Good morning. If you have your Bibles with you, would you turn to Proverbs 20? So here's Proverbs 20 and verse 5. We won't get to it right away, or your cell phones if you don't have a Bible on you, but Proverbs 20, verse 5, we'll get to that in a little while. Let me just kind of get set up here, figure all this stuff out again, and almost ready. So, Friday night was a glorious night, and the angels in heaven were rejoicing. A man by the name of Jonathan Bart was baptized right here. Now, some of you may have met a dear friend of mine. He and I met 3.5 years ago and been studying the Bible, and he's a Christian now. He lives in Renton. We study every Sunday night now at the building, and he invited Jonathan Bart to join us about 3.5 months ago or something like that. You'll love this man. I hope he lives about 30 minutes away, and I hope I can encourage him to worship with us here. But the first night we were talking, and in a very humble manner, as I was asking him about himself and his spiritual background, he said, I don't want to be a fan of Jesus. I want to be a follower of Jesus. And so we studied, and this Friday night, he chose to have his sins washed away in the blood of Jesus, and is now a brother of ours. And I'm just asking you, his name is Jonathan, or Jonathan Bart, and I'm asking you if you could remember now during the sermon or afterwards to pray for him. That man, he'll keep to his commitment. He loves God, but that Satan won't detract him, and he'll stay strong and courageous and full of good deeds. Jonathan Bart. And then, so we celebrate that, and many of you were going to be... So my notes are not transferring. That is a bummer. Last time, some of them did not either. I just want to test something. Okay, well, some of them are and some of them aren't. But... too much excitement. Let's go back 100 years. No computers, no phone. Let's just sit in a little house somewhere. And so many of you are going to be celebrating and eating a lot of good food this coming Thursday in a man-made celebration that was instituted by our forefathers many years ago. We call it Thanksgiving. And it is a man-made holiday. It's not commanded in the Bible at all. But it was intended to honor God. That's why they brought it up, to give him honor and to recognize that our blessings and the good things in our life come from him and to thank him for that. So it's one day of the year set aside, but I want to say this. I want to build beyond that. And that, to say that Thanksgiving is a frame of mind. It's a frame of mind, and the scriptures encourage us to overflow with thanksgiving, to let your prayer in Colossians 2, to let your prayers be full of thanksgiving and everything, giving thanks. And so it's just a frame of mind. And you know, this has been a tough year, maybe not for everybody, but for some of us, a very difficult year. And the beauty and one of the many benefits of being full of thanksgiving is that it makes the good experiences even better, even sweeter when we recognize it and think about it and are thankful for it. And it also makes the harsh events that we go through better, easier to tolerate. They're not as likely to get us down. And so... in every circumstance, even the tougher ones, you know, God tells us to look for that. He doesn't say it in these words, but the idea is to look for some aspect within every experience that we can celebrate over or be thankful for. James 1, verse 2 says and I've said it many times here in this congregation, consider it all joy, my brethren, when you experience various trials. And so that's the idea that, you know, I just like, and I think most of us are, but let's seek to be miners, mining for that good aspect in whatever experience we have, like miners of gold. And there's a mining saying. Some miner said, "Hey," he says, "when you're mining for gold, you got to move a lot of dirt, but you're not looking for the dirt." So in our lives, the same way, there's going to be a lot of dirt that comes our way, but we're going to focus on the gold, not the dirt. So I hope you have a wonderful Thursday and every day before that and after that, full of thanksgiving, giving glory to our God. So we are in our third lesson on the idea of listening, because I started out with the concept that your conversations, our communication, man, they impact every, or at least almost every aspect of our lives, including physical health, by the way. Don't know if you know that, but social scientists have seen that the amount of joy and happiness that people get from communicating with others even affects their health. And someday I'll share with you some very impressive studies, some blind studies that are neat, but it impacts your your relationships, your family, your church, almost every aspect of your life is improved or hindered by the kind of communication, kind of conversations we have. And so we right now are looking at the idea. This is the third lesson on listening, our last lesson for the near future on listening. Because great communication begins with listening, right? James chapter 1 says, "Be quick to hear," meaning eager to hear, "and slow to speak." And in Proverbs 17:27, it says, "He who restrains his words," hold back from speaking a little bit, "he who restrains his words has knowledge. And he who has a cool spirit is a man of understanding." The next verse says, "Even a fool, when he keeps quiet," when he keeps silent, "is considered wise. When he closes his lips, he is considered prudent." You know, there's an American proverb that I just love. I think I learned it as a kid, but I think it was stolen from Proverbs 17:28. It goes like this. It says, "It's better to remain silent and be thought a fool than to open one's mouth and remove all doubt." Don't you love that? And unfortunately, I have been thought a fool more than once in my life. And most of us have said things that we wish we could take back and have a do-over. But I think they stole that American proverb from this biblical proverb right here. Listening. So important to listen and restrain our words. It's just so important. Okay, there we go. I don't think we skipped any. So all communication has two fundamental skills, listening and speaking. You know that. And we looked at four of the listening skills already. There may be more, but I have six here for your blessing. And the first one, we use an acrostic. Oh, I'm sorry. We have four here we've already looked at. We have an acrostic, so each letter of the word listen reminds us of one. The first one is the letter L. So it's the idea of look at the other person you're communicating with love. And it's really easy not to do that. In fact, I had a failure this week. Now, I'm hoping he didn't notice, but a business associate that claimed to be a Christian, and I was shocked at his position on some things because they were unbiblical, and I felt a frustration. I felt an anger. And you know, we tried to end on a good note, a positive note, and all this kind of thing, but I failed. It's so easy to get distracted by the garbage in life, to forget to see that person before us as something created uniquely by God, specifically in His image. And so anyway, we find that that affects our tone, our attitude, the words we use, our body language, everything. We do better in our communication when we look at them with love. And the second one is I, and that just means invest as much time as is necessary. If you're discussing trivial, so what? The phone rings, hey, excuse me, I got to get the phone. Or you're really busy and say, hey, you know, I'd like to continue this. Could we do this at another time? But there are other times when you invest as much time as is necessary because it is the most important thing in your life at that time. And I didn't use any scriptures on the first one, so I won't now. But the second one, invest as much time, we had the example of Job's friends who were awesome up to this point. They came to comfort Job. They knew of his great losses. They saw his great pain that Satan was inflicting on him. They sat down. They grieved with their friend for a week without speaking a word. They invested a lot of time, and I don't care if they were wealthy or not, a week out of anybody's life, sitting on the ground, that's a huge investment, but they did it as an example for us. Share, when we're communicating, we want to share their feelings and not our solutions. And listen, and I'm so guilty of this, everybody with a good heart wants to fix things. We want to bless other people. And so they're speaking, I go, I know how to solve it. Wait a minute. Stop right there. Let me tell you what to do. And that's usually not the time. Sometimes it's the place, but not the time. And people first want to know that you understand, that you care, that you love them. And so we share in their feelings. In Romans 12:15 says, rejoice with those who rejoice. Share that emotion, man. I'm so happy for you. Weep with those who weep. And it says some more, but we'll leave it at that. It's just so important. And then if they want your advice, they'll usually ask it. But timing is everything, and in the beginning, for sure, the more important it is, the more emotionally heavy it is, the less you say. And then the T is to tune in, and as I said last week, tuning in to a conversation in the manner which I described takes an extremely mature Christian, a master communicator, and the tuning in means instead of just listening to the words, we're listening to the emotions, and I know this sounds frou-frou and pop psych, but it's not. It's very biblical. We're listening for the hurt beneath the words, because everybody has bad days when they are just sharp, and so they chew on somebody, and it has nothing to do with the person they're chewing on. We've been the chewer, most of us, and we've been the chewed on, most of us, and so we go, this is out of proportion. This isn't right. Okay, so I left the microwave door open. And that's not something Lisa chews on me for. She has plenty of other things that are more important. but we leave the microwave door open and they're just losing it. You know, there's something deeper than this. They're either hurting or afraid or anxious, worried, angry, something. Maybe it's because of me, maybe it's not, but we want to dig deeper and find out what's the source of this anger. So how do we dig deeper? And that's our next topic. How do you dig deeper to tune in and find out what's going on? And what you do is you engage people with open-ended questions. Open-ended questions. And so you say, what's an open-ended question? Well, that's a good question. And by the way, most of my notes didn't transfer. What's an open-ended question? Well, it's the opposite of a closed-ended question. So now that we accomplished that and we all understand, a closed-ended question, which is the opposite, only requires a yes or a no answer. That's a closed-ended question. They don't take a conversation or a relationship very far. An open-ended question is the opposite of that. So if you have a rookie detective, and I doubt if they would do this, but a rookie detective might ask a close-ended question. Were you home on the night of the 14th? Well, you can say yes or no, and if you say no, does he know where you were at? He has no clue. But a seasoned detective would say, where were you on the night of the 14th? It requires thought on your part, and it gives more information to the person asking the question, where were you? So a husband, and I'll get to this, maybe I'll do it now, but sometimes close-ended questions are okay. You're in a hurry, you're trying to go to church and you can't find your keys. Honey, do you know where my keys are? Yes or no, that's good enough, right? So I'm not saying they're always wrong, but if you want to improve a conversation, you want to dig a little deeper, you want to get closer to the person you're communicating with, then ask open-ended questions. So a husband could say, hey, are you interested in visiting my parents on the, in the second week of September? That's a close-ended question. So she says, no. A better question would be, and of course, if she's your wife or husband, they're going to probably explain it, but a better question would be, hey, what do you think about visiting my parents in the second week of September? And she goes, honey, I'd love to. Or he goes, I'd love to, honey, but you promised your brother you'd help him paint his house that week. So now that's why you don't want to go the second week of September. Close-ended questions in good conversation are usually dead-end questions. They don't get you very far. If you want to become closer and understand another person better and better and get just more quality conversation, then work on asking open-ended questions. It's great with kids. Hey, did you have a good day at school today? Even if you say this, hey, how did school go today? Oh, fine. You know, I understand that because I had 3 teenagers and then 6 grandchildren. So I understand the brevity of certain answers, but maybe we want more than that. Maybe we want more than that. Well, could you tell me a little bit more? But close-ended questions, in my opinion, most of the time are dead-end questions. So I asked you to turn to Proverbs 20, verse 5, because I don't have this one on a slide, just an oversight of my part. But this is the big one. It's an important one. Proverbs 20, verse 5 says the following. A plan in the heart of a man is like deep water. Now, other versions might say a well of deep water, but the idea of deep water is to get it out, you know, you've got to work hard to drop a buck into a deep well and pull it out. Or it could mean if they're just buried way, way down there. The plans of man are like deep water. But the following part of that verse is this. But a man of understanding draws it out. So you're conversing with your spouse and or friend or whatever, and they have some deep thoughts that they're not necessarily against sharing, but maybe they're not much of a talker and you want to know them better, so you want to draw out that deep water, those plans that they have. And how do you do that? With open-ended questions. With open-ended questions. You ask them quality questions that take some thought and enhance the conversation. There's some Bible examples we have. This is Matthew 10:47. We've already looked at it, but I want to look at it from a different aspect. This is where Bartimaeus, the blind man, just outside of Jericho, is sitting, and he hears that Jesus, the healer, is walking by. So he begins to cry out and say, Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. Skipping down some verses in Matthew 10:51, and answering him, Jesus says, He'd come to Jesus. He'd thrown aside his cloak, and people helped him to Jesus, and he's there in front of Jesus, and Jesus says, "What do you want me to do for you?" That's an open-ended question. And the blind man said to him, "Rabboni," which means teacher, "Rabboni, I want to regain my sight." So think about that. Why did Jesus ask him, "What do you want me to do for you?" He knew exactly what the man wanted. He's Jesus. He could read hearts. Besides that, it's pretty obvious. The guy's blind. He's calling out for mercy. I mean, Jesus knew exactly. So why didn't he say, "Hey, do you want me to heal you?" Because that's a closed-ended question that doesn't go anywhere. He either says yes or no. But he says, "What do you want me to do for you?" He was engaging the man with an open-ended question. Really helpful, and especially if you have kids, but if you want to get better at conversing, and I'm the king of closed-ended questions, if you want to get better, think about that. Put that into your thought pattern. I'm going to start asking questions that develop relationships and enhance conversation. I'm going to start asking open-ended questions when I can. Now, here's another example with Jesus with his apostles. Matthew 16:13. Now, when Jesus came into the district of Caesarea Philippi, he was asking disciples, "Who do people say that the Son of Man is?" Open-ended question. They could have gone a million directions on that, and they gave him more than one answer. They said, "Well, some say you are. Some say John the Baptist, others Elijah, but still others Jeremiah or one of the prophets." Jesus said to them, "But who do you say that I am?" He could have said, "Do you think I'm the Christ? What do you think? Have you seen enough? Do you think I'm the Christ?" But he didn't. He said, "Who do you think that I am?" And Simon Peter answered, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." Those are open-ended questions. And they are almost always more valuable than closed-ended to develop relationships and good communication. So here's a great phrase. It's, "Tell me more. Tell me more." So you're talking with your child and you just want to bond with them. You just want to bond with them. And so he says, "Hey, how was your day at school today?" "Oh, fine. We had PE, which is my favorite subject, or we had math, which I love." And, "Well, tell me more. Tell me more." You know, whether it's what you love about math or what happened in math class, but tell me more. It's a great phrase. And listen, brothers and sisters, I think I've said it already, but I am learning so much. I've not preached this stuff before. We've taught a little bit in marriage seminars, but a lot of this is brand new to me. And I'm going, "Oh, this is going to enhance my relationship." So you learn the phrase, "Tell me more," or some aspect of "Tell me more." And it's so great if you want to. There have been many times, I don't think I've told Lisa this, and I should have just told her it because it would have been a great communication starter, but she's a better speaker than me, and sometimes we're driving along and I go, "Man, I really want to bond with my wife. I really want to have a conversation with her." And my mind is blank. "Hey, what's for dinner tonight?" You know, I mean, I don't even know. I want to use the time. And nothing come to my mind. And so maybe start on any subject. John Gottman, he puts a book out there, I think it's called The 7 Keys to Successful Marriage, but it's the best marriage book I've ever read, right in line with the scriptures, and yet he's not a Christian. But the reason it's such a good book is, whether he knows it or not, he's using Bible principles. And he gives a list of quality conversation items. I think there's like 135 questions, and Lisa and I, we took a few. "Hey, let's do a couple tonight." So we take one, and they're so rich, they're so good that I think we got through two that night, and one would have been enough to fill our conversation. And we just got distracted and haven't been doing that. But if you can start a conversation or your spouse says something, you know, find a takeoff of, well, tell me more, or would you mind giving me more detail? Or if they say something, well, how did that make you feel? Or what were you thinking when the person said that? But just ask open-ended questions like tell me more, and it will enrich your conversations. There's another one, the sixth tool that we're going to look at today. You know what? I do have a few written notes. I usually don't. So let me just look down here and see if I've missed anything. So we're going to look at number six. And the N stands for never judge until you have all the facts. Never judge until you have all the facts. Boy, this is so... The Bible is pregnant with this concept. It not only says, don't receive an accusation against an elder except by the mouth of two of the witnesses. And I want to just touch on that for a second. Don't receive it. That means if someone says, can you believe Elder Henry? I mean, I just can't even believe him. And it says, you know, I don't know if I can or not, but this doesn't sound like we're going in a good direction. And although I don't want to offend you, the Bible tells me don't receive an accusation against an elder except by the mouth of two or three witnesses. And that sounds like where we're going. Have you talked to him yet? But it not only says that about elders. That's true for Christians. In fact, in Deuteronomy, where Jesus quotes out of it when he says, let every fact be confirmed by the mouth of two or three witnesses. That's Matthew 18, 15 or 16. Let every fact be confirmed by the mouth of two or three witnesses. Every fact. And so it is so easy. I'm sorry. Never judge until you have all the facts. It's easy to start drawing conclusion before you've gathered everything up and in and investigated and that kind of thing. We want to be very careful not to judge. And here's... Has this ever happened to you? I think it happened to all of us, but you know better than I. You've ever been into conversation with a loved one? And they start telling you about a situation. Whether they use names or not, it doesn't matter. But it does matter. If there's no witness, they shouldn't. But I'm just saying, even if they don't use names, they're telling you about a situation, and you start forming an opinion. In fact, you feel emotions kind of rising up in your mind and your heart, and you start, either their emotions, good ones for that person or against that person, whether that's the person speaking to you or the person, the hypothetical situation they're telling you about, but you feel these emotions, you start judging and forming an opinion. I sure do. Well, you know, that's not a good attitude or whatever. So God says, don't do that, essentially. If I may paraphrase the Bible into a small piece, don't do that. Wait until you have all the facts. And by the way, again, you don't have to raise your hand, but how many times have you ever made a premature judgment and been mad at somebody? I can't believe you did this again. And lo and behold, they didn't do it. Or the motive was pure and they were trying to help or whatever, but it's human to do that, but it's not biblical. And so this is another one that maybe isn't as hard as tuning into the hurt or fear, but it still is one that will help make you a master communicator. If you wait to form your opinion and you dig into all the facts, you know, in Proverbs, I forgot where it is, but it says, the first to plead his case seems just until a second comes and examines him. So you listen to your child say, my teacher, blah, 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 blah. And you go, oh, that's terrible. I'm so angry that your teacher would do that. And so you go, Miss Jones, my child said such and such. Or you ask the child. Maybe you don't even go talk. You say, so, well, why would she do that? What happened just before that? Did you say something? Did you say, well, yeah, okay, well, I kicked him, but, you know. And so it's so easy, especially if it's someone we love and trust and who may be sincere, to listen to what they're saying and draw an opinion without any other witnesses, even if the person is not a liar, even if they're not trying to exaggerate at all. People misinterpret situations sometimes and miss some of the facts. And so we just want to be cautious. And the end stands for never judge. And by the way, I thought, oh, this is so wordy. But you know what? And I know I'm the preacher, but this didn't take me long at all to memorize this. And if you're just not into memory and you think this is valuable, then I'll try to have a handout next week, but I'll send you the PowerPoint if you'd like. Whatever I can do to help. Never judge without all the facts. So here is a proverb along that line. It says Proverbs 18:13. It says, he who gives an answer before he hears. Have you ever been talking and had someone cut you off before you're done and you hadn't given all the detail yet? Or more poignant, has someone ever been talking to you and you cut them off before you got all the detail? This says, he who gives an answer before he hears, it is a folly and a shame. Folly means foolishness. Shame means an embarrassment, a blemish. So he who gives an answer before he hears, is a folly and a shame to him. So easy to do and so harmful. 1 Samuel, we have an example here. 1 Samuel 20, and really a good one. 20 verse 1b. Now we had it in our reading last week, but King Saul is trying to kill David. David's talking to his best friend Jonathan, who happened to be King Saul's son. And David is saying, and what is my sin before your father that he's seeking my life? Jonathan responds, Jonathan, not believing David, said, far from it. You shall not die. Behold, my father does nothing, either great or small, without disclosing it to me. So why should my father hide this thing from me? It is not so, Jonathan said. Well, David explained to him that your father, Jonathan, wants to kill me, and he knows that we're good friends, I'm paraphrasing, and so he's not going to tell you this. But Jonathan says, it's not so. So he didn't judge, even though he didn't agree. He investigated. And in 1 Samuel 20:32, Jonathan is talking to his father, asking, notice, open-ended questions. He didn't say, are you trying to kill David? He didn't do that. Jonathan answered Saul, his father, and said to him, why should he be put to death? What has he done? Verse 33, then Saul hurled his spear at him to strike him down. That's at his son. Hurled his spear at his own son. So Jonathan knew that his father had decided to put David to death. Jonathan investigated with open-ended questions, and sure enough, David was right. Not judging until he had all the facts. Here's another example. This is the second time that Job's friends failed him. We looked at Job chapter 2, Job's grieving and in great pain. His friends go to him. The one first thing they do is incredibly wonderful. They sit down, don't speak a word for a week, just saying, I love you, brother. I'm here for you, brother. But then they bash him and say, your sons wouldn't have died. They made bad judgments. They took the place of God and essentially said this in chapter 2, your sons wouldn't have died if they weren't sinners. That's taking God's place, number one. Number two, they're judging without all the facts. Number three, they're wrong. They're just flat out wrong. So here in this next verse, you'll see they're judging, falsely judging Job himself. Zophar says in Job 11:6, part B, Know then, Job, know then that God forgets a part of your iniquity. He's saying, yeah, you're suffering bad, but you're not even suffering as nearly as bad as you should be. You should be suffering much worse because you're so evil. Their assumption was this, because they didn't have all the facts. Nobody suffers like that unless they're evil, and they were flat out wrong. They were actually judging God Himself and putting bad motives on God Himself. All three friends did it. So this is Job 42, verse 7, near the end of the book. It came about after the Lord had spoken these words to Job that the Lord said to Eliphaz the Temanite, "My wrath is kindled against you and against your two friends, because you have not spoken of me what is right as my servant Job has." They judged without all the facts, and they judged horribly. So, that's pretty much our lesson, especially since I don't have on my notes. But there's six things to work on. Look at the person you're dialoguing with love. No matter who they are, they're still created in God's image, and it will improve your tone, attitude, words, body language, everything you do with them. Look at them with love. Invest as much time as needed, as called for the situation. Share their feelings, not our solutions. Tune into their hurt, the fear beneath their words. Engage them with open-ended questions, and never judge. Never judge until you have all the facts. If you will do these things, you'll be a master communicator. You will enhance your life. You will experience so many blessings, close relationships. You will love the fruits of this. So if this is an area where you want to pursue, you will enjoy the results. But let me say a couple things. This is a skill. And no one starts out in anything as an expert. Just that isn't how it works. Skill means it takes experience and thought and trial and effort to get good at it. Like Joe, who's been in machining, I believe, and that's a skill. We wouldn't be equal if someone gave us the same tools and the same project. It's a skill. So you don't start out, you will have failures in your communication. You will. Because that's human. James 3 says, we all stumble in many things, but the man who doesn't stumble in what he says is a perfect man. And that can mean complete and mature, but it's really tough never to stumble in what we say. So you probably will. So I'm going to suggest this. If you say, man, I could really use this, my life could use this, because it will change your life, I'm suggesting you start a journal. Keep it, if you're like me, then keep it short and simple, because I absolutely detest writing. I hate it. I don't want to do it. Ask my mom when I didn't live in the same state as her or anybody else that I love. But start it anyway. Keep it short and simple. Just have a page, write down the date and say, today I failed in this, but I had two victories. And if you will do that, if you're willing to start this journal, simple one, record your victories and your failures, you're going to see your victories increase. Write down specific goals. I want to get really good at turning into the hurt, because it's so hard for me to stay calm when I feel like they're attacking me. Or I want to get good at sharing their feelings rather than my solution. But write down a goal or two. Ask God for help, because James 1:5 says, if anyone lacks wisdom, communication has a lot to do with wisdom. If anyone lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives generously to all and without reproach. And I'm going to suggest this, that James 1:5 goes way beyond just wisdom. We see that trait of God about giving generously and without reproach in all areas of life, in all areas. Ask, you receive, Seek, you'll find. Knock, the door will be open. That's a promise from God. So ask God for help if you want to get better at communicating. And enjoy growing in your communication skills. May God bless you as you do. Thank you so much.
Longing for thee, beautiful home of the ransom beside the crystal sea. Yes, the sweet rest is remaining for the true children of God. Never complaining, never a chastening rod. Home of the soul, beautiful home, there we shall rest, never to roam, free from all care, happy and bright. Jesus is there, he is the light up in the storm. Lonely are we, sighing for home, longing for thee, beautiful home of the ransom beside the crystal sea. Soon the bright homeland adorning, we shall behold the glad dawn. Rain on the Lord till the morning, trust till the night is gone. Home of the soul, beautiful home, there we shall rest, never to roam, free from all care, happy and bright. Jesus.